for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. There's no one right way to feed your beloved dog or cat, and given all the options, it can be confusing. Food expert Marion Nessel and animal nutrition specialist Malden Nesheim have co-authored a new book on pet food and the industry practices and claims. They offer specific recommendations for healthful diets for dogs and cats. Their book is titled Feed Your Pet Right. And they join me in the studio. Of course, we've already talked about my dog, so we're going to talk about your pets. And if you'll call us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. You can also join us on Facebook and Twitter. Marion, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And Malden, good morning to you.
And good morning to you. It's nice to be here.
So glad to have you both here. Thank you. Pets and pet foods have become huge, huge business. How big, Malden?
Well, the pet food industry in total is about $43 billion in the United States, and pet food alone is about $17 billion. So it's actually about the eighth largest economic industry in the United States.
But you say that there's more known about the nutrient requirements of pets than people. How can that be?
Well, in the early days of nutrition, when people were trying to discover vitamins and minerals and so forth that we needed in our diet, dogs particularly were experimental animals. And so people were able to, under controlled conditions, feed them a specific diet so that they could tell how much of a particular vitamin or a mineral they might need. So in that regard, they had the advantage that we don't have with people in terms of being able to feed people in a very controlled environment. So that's how we really learned an awful lot about what pets need.
Now, as you look at these food recalls that we've had for pets, Marion Nessel, just in the last few years, that must have worried you a lot.
Oh, it worried us enormously. We got the contract for this book 3 weeks before the major melamine pet food recalls of 2007. And, you know, I got derailed on that and followed the recall, and that came out as a separate book in 2008, Pet
and
Food Politics.
Tell me why that recall took place.
Well, it was the most astounding thing. First of all, it turned out that a company in Canada that made wet pet foods, that's the kinds in cans or pouches, made 95 different brands of cat and dog food in the United States. Who knew that? Nobody knew that. And that an ingredient in those foods, wheat gluten, had melamine in it, this compound that's used for plastic dinnerware, but turns out to crystallize in the kidneys of cats and dogs. Oh. The melamine was the wheat gluten, which was actually wheat flour and melamine, was made in China. And it went through this enormous chain of distribution so that nobody even knew what it was. It completely floored the company that
did
this.
Well, and that brings me to how do we know what is in cat and dog food even now? I mean, if you read the cans, which I don't because I don't feed my dog canned dog food or kibbles, how can we really know what's in that food?
Well, the first thing that's on most all pet food packages is the ingredient list. So there is an ingredient list that's in there in the order of the amount that's there.
Right.
So the first ingredient is the largest amount and the last
one's
the smallest. And so that's the one thing that's on the pet food label that says this is what's in it. Now, what we have to do is really depend upon the pet food manufacturers for the quality of that ingredient and in terms of making sure that ingredient is really what they're representing on the pet food can.
But and we it's not necessarily just that first ingredient. It's all those chemicals. It's all those other things that are in there that we don't necessarily know how to identify.
Well, there's a huge long list of things on pet food cans. Most of them are vitamins and minerals because there's a complete mix of the vitamins and usually many of the trace minerals that they need. And then you'll find in pet foods things like antioxidants that are preservatives to keep it from going. There will be special, many times there are special additives to provide a certain amount of fiber and substance to make the kibble stick together. That sort of thing in pet foods as well.
There are fewer chemicals than there are in a loaf of bread, for example,
really?
In a supermarket.
Really?
It's not the chemicals that you worry about. It's some of the other things. But it's regulated by the FDA. The Center for Veterinary Medicine is in charge of pet food. It's regulated like animal feed. And that was one of the things that got us into this in the first place, was because I couldn't understand how to read the labels.
Thank you.
I found them completely baffling. They don't look like human food labels at all. We think they should, and that one of the things the FDA should consider is putting a nutrition facts label or a pet food pack facts label on pet food so that consumers can understand them.
Do you have pets?
Not at the moment. We travel so much that neither one of us can manage to be with one. I think it would be pet abuse. We have grand pets.
I see. And did you have pets previously?
We had such a long list of pets. Mal grew up on a farm, so he had everything. But even my kids had cats and dogs and gerbils and mice and rats. And once we even had a tarantula.
Really? How long did you keep the tarantula?
Longer than I liked.
All right, let's start with what do dogs need to eat?
Well, there's actually dogs and cats basically need the same things we do. In other words, they need a diet that'll provide them a source of protein that's got a certain amount of balance to it. They need some fat, they need some carbohydrate that provides energy in the diets, and then they need a set of vitamins and minerals that take care of their other nutritional requirements. So we're looking for a pet food to provide a source of energy, a source of protein, and a source of the micronutrients that they require.
Should there be different nutritional provisions for puppies as opposed to older dogs or cats?
Well, yes. I mean, puppies do require a somewhat higher level of protein than do older dogs and cats. The same is true with kittens. On the other hand, there are foods on the market that are called complete and balanced for all life stages. And so these will provide the needs for not only puppies but also adult dogs. But there are some higher requirements for puppies to make them grow better.
So you need to feed them a little bit more, but not overfeed them. The biggest problem in dog and cat feeding is obesity, just like it is in people.
Is it really? And we just tend to feed them too much.
Well, we love feeding them.
Of course.
Especially treats.
Well, and what about those treats? Are they good for our pets?
Well, treats are a very important kind of way in which we use them for training and so forth. But just like junk food for people, they have calories. And we have to watch out how much treat we give them because, as Marion says, the obesity issue is probably the main health problems that there are in pets today.
Melvin Nesheim, he's co-author of Feed Your Pet Right, the authoritative guide to feeding your dog and cat. He's professor emeritus of nutritional sciences at Cornell University. Marion Nessel is the other co-author. She's professor of nutrition, food studies, and public health at New York University. She's also the author of another book. It's titled Pet Food Politics, The Chihuahua in the Coal Mine. Do join us, 800-433-8255. 8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Marion, where do the ingredients in pet foods come from?
Well, they come from the same places that our food comes from, just the parts of the animals that we don't eat. So the meat ingredients, I mean, it's one of the things that we concluded from this book was that pet foods serve an enormous social function in taking up the parts of animals and even plants that humans don't eat. You know, we only, if you look at a cow, for example, only about half of a cow is used for human food. The rest of it would be thrown away. And since we slaughter 35 million cows a year in the United States, that presents billions of pounds of waste. And about a quarter of that, a quarter of the part that's rendered, I think, goes into pet food. And so that in that sense, pet food serves a very important ecological function in using those parts of the animals. They're very nutritious. It's just that for cultural reasons, we don't eat them.
You know, it's interesting that you say the pet food industry is fond of saying pet foods are better regulated than human foods, but in your judgment, the regulation of pet food is severely constrained by the lack of genuine authority. We're going to take a short break and talk about that very issue when we come back, because I'm sure many of our listeners are concerned about exactly what's in the food they're feeding their pets. Stay with us. And the book we're talking about in this hour is titled Feed Your Pet Right, The Authoritative Guide to Feeding Your Dog and Cat. The co-authors, Marion Nessel and Malda Nesheim, are here with me. And, of course, our lines are filling up very quickly. We'll take as many of your questions as we can. Did you both try to visit pet food industrial centers, Meldon?
We did indeed. We tried to visit pet food research facilities. We went to factories. We went to contract research facilities.
And what happened?
Well, it was a mixed bag. A couple of companies welcomed us to their facilities and took us through factories and so forth. And in other cases, there was a stone wall. We were not able to get in. They basically said, no, we don't allow visitors. And
even when we knew that wasn't true.
Yes.
What do you mean you knew it wasn't true?
Well, we had, in one situation, we were told by an official of the company that they had visitors all the time. We made arrangements to go to that company. This was a research facility. And a couple of days before our appointment, they called and said, they wrote us and said, sorry, we're not going to let you within 100,000 yards of this place.
Because
we think you're doing industrial espionage, actually. We were shocked by that.
I mean, there's a lot of concern by pet food companies because there's the animal rights groups have been concerned about using dogs and cats in feeding studies and in experimental studies. And so they're very sensitive to how these animals are being treated. And so the companies that we visited, which were actually the Hills Company and also the Mars in their facilities in England, actually had wonderful facilities for their dogs and cats, and they were treating them, as far as we could see, extremely well.
But I gather that virtually no industry representative would talk to you on the record about what you were writing.
Absolutely not. They were really concerned that they not be quoted. We were quite careful about that. It surprised us because what we actually saw was what they seemed to be doing was okay, by our standards. The places were clean. The work was done well. They seemed to care about the issues.
So what are they hiding?
And that was our question. And I think they just don't want. I mean, it's an old industry dating back to the early years of the 20th century when I think what went into pet food must have been much less savory than it is now. And so they got into the custom of just not letting anybody know what was going on. It's now a very mature industry. It's mainly owned by large human food companies, Nestle and Mars, Procter & Gamble,
Colgate,
Palmolive. I mean, these are big consumer product companies or food companies. And we think they ought to treat pet food the same way they treat their human foods and treat them with the same kind of openness and respect and transparency.
But they apparently get away with not only refusing you, but their operation is in conjunction, I gather, with the FDA itself. Is that correct?
Well,
not exactly.
Yeah, not exactly.
Explain.
The pet food facilities are, in fact, supposed to be inspected.
Yes.
But the inspections do not, we don't know the frequency in which they occur.
Why don't you know the frequency?
I don't have an answer to that.
We don't know why we don't know, but we assume it's not very frequent. It's certainly going to be low down on the poor, beleaguered FDA's list of priorities.
But did you ask the FDA?
We never asked them that question, although I visited with the Center for Veterinary Medicine and talked to them about what we have in our book. And the new Center for Veterinary Medicine is much more open to the kinds of questions that were asking, and actually I didn't find much disagreement with the administration of that agency on the kinds of things I was suggesting. They're thinking along the same pattern. I think that pet food ought to be regulated the same way that human food is regulated, and we actually make that recommendation because most people buy pet food in supermarkets.
And most people buy pet food believing that it's going to be healthy for their particular pet. What are the different ingredients that might upset a cat or a dog? What are the problems that people encounter with various pet foods, short of melamine.
Well, I think like humans, pets vary very much in their ability to digest foods. The big issue in pet food is grains. And many people believe that dogs and cats were evolutionarily wild and carnivores. But we actually know that there's research that shows that they can digest grains as long as the grains are cooked adequately. But a lot of people feed their their pets, kibble or feed their pets, foods with grains in them, and they find that their pets get sick, and our suggestion there is change the diet. There's certainly a product for every single kind of diet that anybody would want to feed, and for many people, the convenience of being able to feed a pet something that you just open a can or open a bag is worth really a lot.
What about the pricing of pet food?
We had a lot of fun with
the
pricing.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with that because you can find an enormous range of prices
of
for pet food.
For the same, for identical products.
Essentially for the same product. I mean, if you...
Give me an example.
Premium.
Yeah,
premium.
I mean, I mean, one of the types of foods that's often put down are so-called grocery store foods for pets, which you can pick up in the pet food aisle in a grocery store. And those are generally, although you can also find premium foods there as well, they're generally lower-priced foods, and
sometimes much lower.
Yeah, and they will have, if you look at the first five ingredients on them, you will find that they probably have a source of grains. They'll have some source of meat or a byproduct meal or something like this, and some fat of some kind. And you look at premium pet food, which is maybe priced at twice the level.
Or three times,
yes. And it will have the same five ingredients, or they look very much the same. So we asked people in the industry, what is premium all about? What do you mean by premium? And one person who said to us, as we were having dinner one night with him, he said, well, it's all marketing. It's all about marketing. That's what premium means. And the other thing it means is less poop.
Which is a very big issue for indoor pets.
For heaven's sake. How about a human diet for dogs? Do you see that being done as a result, for example, of that melamine scare, Marion?
Sure. I mean, one of the things that happened instantly after the melamine scare, because the companies themselves didn't know whether they had melamine in their products or not. Because they had no idea what the sources of their ingredients were. And that actually, at least in the immediate aftermath of the melamine recalls, many companies began becoming much more transparent about their sourcing and much more careful about it. And if you go on the websites and do your research, you can find companies that really are trying very, very hard to source ingredients and say where they come from and check it and send their own inspectors out to make sure that they're getting what they say they're getting or think they're getting. For many other companies, I think they've let it slide. And the immediate aftermath of that seems to have slunk back a little bit, and that kind of worries us a little bit. We think they should be very, very careful about sourcing ingredients, as should human foods.
Well, and if one decides that feeding a creature, a dog or a cat, human food is the best route to go, I would presume you're talking about a combination of a fair amount of protein, some vegetables, some fruits, the whole range of fruits with the exception of chocolate, onion, garlic.
Macadamia nuts.
Macadamia nuts. Those four things are the human foods that should not be given to a pet?
They shouldn't be given to them in anything other than tiny amounts.
But chocolate, not at all.
I think in small amounts, I don't think it's harmful.
Really?
Well, for your dog.
Yeah.
It's a small amount goes a long way.
Yeah.
But for a big dog, a little bit doesn't. But
right.
Why would you give chocolate to dogs?
Exactly.
Not a good idea.
Exactly.
It's really not a good idea. But the, if people want, we have a recipe in our book, a generic recipe for dog and for cat food homemade. We actually think that any way that you choose to feed your pet, fitting in with your own lifestyle and your own belief system and value system is fine. There's a commercial product for it, or you can do it yourself. You just have to be careful about a few things.
All right. We've got a lot of callers waiting, so we'll open the phones now, 800-433-8850. First, let's go to Syracuse, New York, and to Lewis. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. I'm wondering we feed our dog Blue Boy kibble. Would you care to suggest any other top brands of dog foods that are really high in quality?
Well, we haven't tried to make comparisons between individual companies' dog foods, and so I would be somewhat reluctant to try to do that.
Somewhat or just plain reluctant.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we're absolutely not going to do that because one of our contentions is that these things are virtually identical. For the most part, if you look at the ingredient list, they're all the same. You have to decide about price, whether you want your ingredients to be natural, organic, or whatever. Once you make that decision, I would look for the cheapest one within that category.
Does that make sense to you, Lewis?
Yeah, I guess it does. But, I mean, the particular brand we use, they do have, you know, non-wheat and barley and corn types. I mean, is that something you find throughout the industry or?
No, within that category, I think that's fine. That sounds perfectly. Oh, how's your pet doing on it? That's the real question. If your pet is doing fine on it, I'd stick with it.
What kind of pet do you have, Lewis?
She's a small poodle.
Uh-huh. Weighing how much?
About 10 pounds.
Wow,
very
that
small
is
poodle.
A small poodle.
Small poodle.
That's about as large as my long-haired Chihuahua. So I have chosen to go the human food route simply because my little dog was getting sick on other kinds of commercial foods. So
you know, ours was also. We switched brands, and she seems to have found a good spot with
good
them.
Perfect.
Congrats.
That's perfect. That's just what we would advise.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Let's go to Bloomfield Township, Michigan. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
I was calling because I had a couple questions.
Sure.
The first was I have a dog and a cat. For some reason, the dog prefers the cat food. I give them both like a Purina brand chow kibble, and the dog will wait for the cat to finish, and then the cat will leave, and the dog will go for that. They both prefer the Purina cat chow. That was my first question, because it doesn't make a difference.
Okay, hold on there. Does it make a difference, Mal?
Well, no, I don't think so. I mean, the nutrients that are going to be in this cat food are the nutrients that the dog needs. They're probably higher in protein. For example, cat food generally is higher in protein than dog food.
Interesting. Why should that be? If the dog needs a high amount of protein.
Well, the cat. It's interesting. The cats don't seem to be able to regulate their protein metabolism as well as dogs do.
Interesting.
So that they will keep on degrading the amino acids that are in protein. And so that if you lower the amount of protein, they don't seem to compensate for that. So they do need a higher level of protein pretty much throughout their lives.
Well, maybe that dog needs a higher level of protein. What do you think, Lisa? What kind of dog do you have?
She is a cockapoo.
A cockapoo. And how large?
She's about 23 pounds.
Okay, so.
Well, I think she probably just really likes this cat food, too.
Yeah, sounds that way. What's your second question?
Well, I was going to say, I think the cat food tastes really good because the cat, it was very fussy, and this was the only brand it liked, so it must be tasty. And the dog likes the taste, too. And then my second question was about table food, and you sort of talked about it a little, but I have three kids, and there's always lots of scraps left after dinner. And I hate throwing them down the drain. I'd rather give them to the dog as long as they're not on that list that you said of forbidden foods. Would that be okay?
I think it's fine. You just don't want to overfeed. I mean, you know you've got a dog that eats everything in sight. You better be careful not to overfeed it.
I think you also have to be careful about the amount of fat left over in the food that your kids are eating, wouldn't you say?
Well, you can. I mean, it's conceivable that a very high fat diet might cause some loose stools or something like that. But generally, if you are as Marion says, don't feed them too much. If you're going to feed them a lot of table scraps, then cut back on the amount of kibble because they all have calories, and you
exactly.
don't want them to become overweight.
I think one of the things we say in our book is that if humans ate the way dogs and cats are supposed to eat, we would all be a lot healthier.
That's interesting. Thanks for calling, Lisa. To Krista, who's in Salt Lake City, Utah. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I have a comment. I have a cat who was getting older and was kind of sickly and had been feeding all of my cats in natural cat food for years, the same one. And by some chance, the store I would get it from, the health food store, was completely out of it for a while. And so I had to switch to another one, which was an organic cat food. And within 2 weeks, this cat had gained weight. He was purring again. He'd stopped purring for years. He was purring again. He was playing like a kitten. He was getting along with the other cats. And all my cats have become healthier just from switching to this organic cat food. It's been amazing. And they eat less of it. So in a way, the price actually kind of balances out on that.
I want to hear about organic versus the other kind.
Well, organic doesn't really apply to dog and cat food because the Department of Agriculture doesn't have a regulation for organic pet food. It's never passed one.
But then how can they put that label on it?
Well, they can say it's organic. Nobody's enforcing the rules very much. It's another one of these situations. They can't figure out how to do organic pet food because the vitamin and mineral mixes are always in these complete imbalanced foods are never organic, and they're often produced elsewhere.
Krista, I'm glad your cat feels better and is purring again. Thanks for calling. Short break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about cat and dog food. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by Tarcher Penguin, with Jeremy Rifkin's new book, The Empathic Civilization, The Race to Global Consciousness in a World in Crisis, in stores and online. By the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting efforts to find and fight the causes of homelessness, on the web at melvilletrust.org. And by the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, what it's like having a ball player come along who's younger and faster than you. We talk about the ups and downs of life in the big league with New York Times columnist and former center fielder Doug Glanville. He has a new book. Also, filmmaker Rodrigo Garcia talks about his new movie, Mother and Child, and about directing episodes of HBO's In Treatment. Join us.
And welcome back. We're talking about the best approaches to feeding your beloved cats and dogs. And with me here in the studio, co-authors Marion Nessel and Malden Nesheim. Their new book is titled Feed Your Pet Right, The Authoritative Guide to Feeding Your Dog and Cat. Let's go now to St. Louis, Missouri. Good morning, Teresa. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine.
Good. I'm a huge fan of the show. But my question mostly is this. I'm St. Louis born and raised. We have Ralston Purina, and which has always been a big part of my life. We've raised rabbits and all kinds of crazy stuff growing up as a child, and I've always had pets. And we've always fed Purina brand foods. And I guess my question is this. Were they one of the ones that were caught up in the melamine issue? We've always been of the understanding that the majority of what they handle is mostly done locally. And I'm just kind of curious that they were caught up in the mess. And then the other quick point that I wanted to make to add to your list of absolute no-nos for animals is raisins and grapes.
Oh, yes. Quite right.
New information.
Quite right, Teresa. All right. On the melanin issue, Mary.
Yeah, everybody got caught by melamine, even the best companies, because wheat gluten is a common ingredient. It raises the protein of pet foods. And they didn't realize that three or four steps in the supply chain back was an unscrupulous producer in China who was using wheat flour and melamine as a way of pretending that it was wheat gluten. Everybody got caught in it.
Were they one of the companies that you guys visited?
No, they were one of the companies that wouldn't let us visit.
Really? Which is surprising, considering how many thousands of visitors, us included, every single year, they let wander through their facilities.
Yeah,
and very interesting.
Yeah, I even know a vice president of Nestle, which is the parent company of Purina Pet Foods, and he couldn't pull strings to get us in, he said.
Mel, do you want to comment?
Well, I think the company Purina does have a public facility where they show the dogs and cats, but we were trying to get into their real research facilities, and I think that's the difference, probably.
All right, thanks for calling, Teresa. Here's an email from Jimmy, who says, "I've noticed an increasing number of cat foods coming out with greens, long grain rice, and other additions not usually included in the past. I'm under the impression that cats are strictly carnivores. I don't understand these new dietary additions to some brands. Is this a viable addition to my beloved cat's diet, Mel?"
Yes, well, cats, as we've said earlier, are able to digest grains. The research on this is pretty clear. So it is something they can, the long grain rice is something they can undoubtedly digest and get a source of energy from. And the reason I think you're seeing things like long grain rice and greens in these foods is there's been a lot of people have been reacted against things like wheat because of the wheat gluten problem, or against corn, because corn is suddenly become a very bad thing to put into pet foods. And so they're using alternative sources of grains, such as the long grains rice.
The greens are there for marketing. I mean, this is about marketing.
So
you look at it and you think, gee, this sounds yummy.
Huh.
And healthy.
And there's nothing wrong with putting the greens in there. That's great.
The cats can handle them too.
Yeah. One caller says he's put his dog on a raw food diet, which has completely eliminated his infections. He has more energy and now never needs to have his teeth cleaned. That message came through Facebook. What about raw foods, Mal?
Well, we ran into a number of people like this caller who said that they have switched their animal, dog or cat, to a raw food diet, and they just say wonderful things about it. On the other hand, there's very little research that one can point to say whether this works or not. And we have no trouble with people using raw food diets. The only concern we have are the potential of bringing in microorganisms into the home with raw food diets, and I think one has to be very careful from a food handling and food safety perspective. But we're aware that there are many people who feel that these diets have been very good for their animals.
I mean, we're talking about raw hamburger, raw chicken, raw beef, raw lamb, all of those raw.
Right.
And yet humans have been advised against not only making sure you wash your hands, but also against eating those raw foods.
Dogs and cats don't suffer as much from salmonella infections as humans
do. Oh, really?
But that salmonella, if it's there, can be transmitted to vulnerable members of the family. And so it's especially... And there's some supplementation that you need to do if you're feeding a raw diet.
Like what?
You need to make sure that they're getting the right balance of calcium and phosphorus. Anything else?
And how do you do that?
Supplements.
That's important because there are on the market now commercial raw diets. So you can buy a complete and balanced raw cat food or dog food. And these are generally sold in frozen form. But if you're feeding a diet in which you're only feeding raw meats and things like this, you do have to make sure they're properly supplemented. And calcium and phosphorus, there are supplements of calcium and phosphorus you can get in pet food stores, or you can use bone meal or things like this.
All right.
We give a recipe.
To Wichita, Kansas. Good morning, William.
Hi, Diane.
Hi.
I just wanted to comment on feeding your dogs a raw diet. I feed my two dogs, usually chicken and hamburger every day, and I wanted to let people know that it's really a wonderful thing to get your dogs on. My older dog was very obese before I started the diet, and now that he's on it, he's as playful as the young one again, and just wanted to let everyone know that.
Sure. William, tell me what else you feed your dogs besides raw beef and chicken.
Well, one important part of the diet is to make sure you get organ meats in, such as heart, liver, and kidneys. But I try and give about 80% to meat, and such as hamburger and chicken and bone, and then about 20% to organ meat.
Interesting. And you say you have put a recipe in your book for a raw food diet.
Well, we have a generic recipe for feeding dogs and cats that can be applied to any kind of diet. But we've certainly heard this about raw diets a lot. We've also heard the same kinds of things from almost every other kind of diet that you can think about.
Interesting.
People feel very strongly about how they feed their pets, and I think that's great.
One caller has said she's learned from holistic vets that cats do need a higher value of protein, some 30% more than dogs. So when dogs eat cat food, their excretory systems are stressed by having to get rid of that excess, thus causing more problems with the kidneys and liver.
I didn't think the difference was that great.
No, there's been a long-running controversy about feeding high-protein diets to dogs, particularly. Back in when some of the first recommended dietary allowances for pets were put together, there was a caution about feeding high-protein diets to dogs. And that was eventually taken out of another edition of it because of the controversy with the companies. So there still are people who feel that very high levels of protein for dogs and cats do in fact, stress the kidneys and are not something that they generally recommend. But the difference between cat and dog food probably is not sufficient to make us too concerned about it.
I see. All right, let's go to Canandaigua, New York, and to Pamela. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Diane. I want to thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
As I'm driving home for shopping for our dog, we have a 13-year-old yellow lab who's very ill.
Oh.
He has cancer, and I took him to see a holistic vet, and the first suggestion she made was to change his diet from, I purchased very good commercial dog food, to a real diet, and he has continued to live for 4 more weeks. And I have to say it's also made me think about how I eat and how my children will eat.
That is...
I do use supplements for the dog, and I think his spirit is going to be leaving us very shortly.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that, Pam. And I wish you the best. I know how hard it is to watch a pet decline, Marion.
It sounds to me as if your dog has left you a great gift if you're feeding your family better.
Yeah, exactly. What about that relationship between human food and pet food as we look at the whole environment now?
Well, people today really feel their pets are a member of the family.
Exactly.
I mean, the one of the big trends that the pet food industry has come upon is the so-called humanization of dogs and cats, and feeling that they're members of the family, and so people feel if they're going to feed they want to feed their dog and the cat just as well as they feed members of their family. And so that's why you see more trends toward premium dog foods, calling about human-grade ingredients, and all of these trends that you see in the advertising that comes along with pet foods.
One caller would like to know what the rule of thumb is to look for in the first five ingredients you would see on a label, Mal.
Well, generally what a pet food, the first five ingredients in a pet food have to provide three basic things. They have to provide a source of protein. They have to, most of them provide a source of some carbohydrate of some sort and a source of fat or oil. And so you'll usually find in the first five ingredients something like that. And it may be something like poultry byproduct meal, or the first ingredient may be chicken, or it may be sometimes it'll be a grain. But those are the things that you look for in the first five ingredients.
I usually put a teaspoon of olive oil in Maxie's food each day. You're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Let's go now to Annie in Raleigh, North Carolina. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Diane. My name is Annie Janice, and it's always a pleasure listening to your show.
Thank you.
I'm calling because I had a Great Dane who was only six and developed osteosarcoma in her nose. I'm in the veterinary field myself, and I began to give her a home-cooked diet. But what I was told by the oncologist was that I wasn't giving her enough nutrition, vitamins, minerals, and she would shortly develop metabolic and skeletal abnormalities. So I think it's really critical that whoever is giving their dog a home-cooked diet understands the proportions that their dog needs in terms of vitamins and minerals. And I had to go to a company in the Midwest who specialized in putting together vitamins and minerals for home-cooked diets. I'm sure there are several of them out there.
Interesting. Marion, do you know about that?
No, I didn't know about that company, but that sounds like very, very good advice.
I mean, what kinds of vitamins
and
minerals?
You can use a standard human multivitamin and just cut it down proportionally to the weight of your pet. Those work just fine.
And Annie, what are you using?
I'm sorry, did you ask me?
Yes, I was wondering what you were using.
Yeah, I'm just now looking because they gave me two possibilities. One is that I could go out it says to supplement a one-a-day maximum multivitamin, generic choline, 600-milligram tablets. They asked me to give her Morton light salt mixture, then a posture, which is an elemental calcium, and then a generic zinc gluconate tablet.
Yeah, it's all very interesting.
Sounds like very good advice to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a source of calcium, and they have the source of vitamins and some trace elements that are needed. So I think she got good advice.
How far do you think you're going to get insisting that the industry, the pet food industry, do as you are asking, which is to better label, to be better inspected, to provide true facts about what's in their food.
They'll go as hard as they're pushed. And one of the things that we recommend is that pet food owners stay on top of these issues, call the consumer representatives at the companies they buy pet food for, and absolutely insist on the level of transparency and information that they need. I mean, we're just concerned that they don't even put calories on the food labels for pet for cats and dogs at a time when obesity is such a problem in these animals.
And surely obesity shortens life in these creatures.
It does.
Yes, I mean, we, as far as we can tell, that's true. In fact, there's been a study by the Ralston Purina Company that actually fed dogs about 75% of what they would eat normally, and they actually lived about a year or a year and a half longer than those that were not fed as much. So one of the best things we can do for our pets is not overfeed them.
And that's the last word. Do not overfeed your pet. Marion Nessel and Malden Nesheim, their new book is titled Feed Your Pet Right. And I'm going to think very hard about what to give to Maxie. Thanks for being here.
Our pleasure.
Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.